Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 16th through the 26th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
The car ride was kind of relaxing, compared to the events that had led up to it. After a while of sitting in the car, however, my back brushing against the seat, I felt a familiar sticky sensation on my skin. I had been wearing a loose, thick shirt, so I hadn't noticed right away that I had started to bleed again. Also, the journey into the underground had kept my mind fully occupied, so maybe I just hadn't paid any attention to fleeting discomfort. Now that I was leaning against the backrest, the fabric rubbing against my skin, I finally noticed the dampness. "Sorry, could you pull over for just a sec?" I begged my coworker. Darius nodded and parked near the side of the road. Madeline, who had so far been staring out of the window from the back seat with wide, attentive eyes, perked up and tilted her head at me. "What is it?" she asked. I wordlessly wrangled off my shirt. Thankfully, the blood had not left any bigger marks on it yet. But after also taking off the singlet I had been wearing underneath, I found that it was completely soaked. The blood had already started to dry, causing me to flinch in pain as I had to peel the crusted fabric off my skin. "Ah, crap," Darius muttered. "Don't worry, I don't think it's gotten onto the car seat," I said calmly, inspecting the large wet stains on my undershirt. I remembered I still had another fresh one in my backpack, and after a bit of fumbling, I quickly put it on before slipping back into my shirt. "Your tattoos are almost all gone. There's just like a few colorful stains left," Darius remarked with a concerned look on his face. "What? Ah, shit," I cursed. "I love them. Damn it." On the other hand, what was I expecting? They were already bleeding when we were messing around by the entrance. No wonder they've gone to crap while I was actually down there. "Why'd they bleed out, though?" Madeline asked. "It's because tattoo ink partly consists of iron, I believe," I explained. "The underground really doesn't like that kind of stuff, does it?" I dropped the bloodied singlet under my seat before grabbing my backpack and pulling out my whip and revolver. After I had failed to keep either of them at hand last time, I wanted to make sure I'd have them close by in case I would need them. Darius watched me pensively before pulling back onto the road. "I can't believe you managed to keep it together throughout this shit," he muttered, a hint of respect in his tone. "I would have probably just lost it at some point." I smiled. "I'm too stupid to care. Speaking of which, there's still some things I don't understand. Like, remember that photo I found in Dale's office?"
"The one with the people with no faces?" Darius offered.
"Yeah, like, what's up with that?" The rabbit-headed girl suddenly leaned forward. "Faceless people on photos? That's what happens to people when one of the wild ones takes their form. Their faces vanish from all photos with them in them." After a short pause, she added, "I heard one of the ones who took me away talk about that. He said that the one who took my form should see to destroying whatever pictures they found of me around the house, so Mom and Dad wouldn't get suspicious."
"Wow. That's awful," Darius muttered. Madeline nodded.
"Yeah, my life sucks, but at least I get to piss off Warren, so that's a win."
Another thing I've been wondering about is what the number 3 means to Warren. I noticed it when I watched him eat. He kept breaking his bread into 3 pieces. He also got shot 3 times. Maybe that's why, but I'm not sure, I thought out loud.
"Actually, a ton of the older ones have a thing for the number 3. Like, they always do stuff three times, the rabbit-headed girl chimed in. Like eating three berries at once, or repeating what they say three times. I never quite understood what the deal with that is, though. Suddenly perking up, I took out my phone and dialed Clara's number. She'd know, I remember thinking. My friend picked up almost right away, and I put her on speaker. Hey, girl, she greeted me cheerfully. I've been waiting for you to call. Got some free time? We could... Sorry, I kind of need your help, I explained curtly. I felt sorry for interrupting her, especially since she had no idea what I had experienced these last few days. I made a mental note to tell her sometime. She'd totally freak out. What does the number three mean? She paused for a second. Like, in occultism? Yes. Okay, first thing that comes to mind is the rule of three. Not sure how to explain it, but think like karma. You know, everything you do comes back to you. The threefold law basically just says that it comes back to you three times. It can count for every aspect of life, but it's especially related to magic. Then there's the number three in the Christian faith, as in the devil tempted Jesus three times, and there's the Holy Trinity and so on. Her voice trailed off. Why you want to know? I'll explain later, I promise. Okay? Thanks. Bye. I quickly stammered before ending the call. You think that may be it? I asked Madeline. I got no clue. Maybe it's just meaningful to them. Like, who knows? They're a bunch of stiffs anyways. No wonder they're so into numbers and rules. She sounded a little nervous, and I couldn't help but wonder if she might have been thinking about what the ones underground would do to her if they would find her amiss.
The best piece of financial advice I've ever received is to pay yourself first. That's why now with every paycheck I receive, I start by putting a little bit away for those rainy days. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns recommends a diversified portfolio that can help you weather all of the market's ups and downs. Using Acorns, before I knew it, I had a couple thousand dollars in a little nest egg account. Sign up now and join the over 14 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $25 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/49ers or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/49ers.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 16th through the 26th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
We pulled up in front of the park's employee entrance only minutes later. The sun had fully set by now and the moon was high in the sky. I could see the Ferris wheel looming over us in the distance, faintly shimmering in the pale silver light. It looked ominously foreboding. I tucked the revolver into my waistband as best I could and secured the whip to one of my belt loops. So, what do we do now? Darius asked. I'm not quite sure, to be honest. I need to go on my own, though. First, I gotta get to Nathan. That was the aim of my wager, after all. I'm not sure if Warren is already here, but I don't think it matters either way. He never said I had to beat him to the park, just that I'd have to be here before 2 days passed. And this was hardly one single day, so I think I'm good. Let's just hope he makes good on his promise. I swallowed, looking up at the night sky pensively. I'm pretty sure he has to, Madeline told me reassuringly. Then again, he doesn't really stick to rules all the time, apparently, she added in a worried tone. Maybe we should call the others, Darius offered. You know, in case things get out of hand. His audible concern and the implications of his words sent a shiver down my spine. "I don't want to get them into trouble," I muttered. "We could use some help, though. I'm not leaving here either, by the way," Darius stated. "Well, do it then, but tell them exactly what they're getting themselves into. I don't want them to get hurt. Madeline, stay with Darius, okay?" The rabbit-headed girl nodded. I cracked her and my colleague a forced smile before turning to get on my way. "Be careful," I heard Madeline shout after me. The park had always been frightening at night. There's just something to it, knowing that you're not on your own and that something could be hiding right around the corner. This time, however, I felt like the sound of my quickening heartbeat could drown out that of my breathing itself. I marched through the streets, the utter silence keeping me on high alert. I was heading for Twinvale Point, but I couldn't help but stop by the horror section. Mr. Scratch's cage stood deserted next to the funhouse. I simply wanted to see him. I needed this. I whistled sharply, then uttered his name a couple times. Finally, I could hear rustling coming from somewhere around the corner, and only seconds later, the sock puppet came bounding out from behind the building. He would have almost collided with me, but came to a surprisingly swift halt and rubbed his horned black head against my shoulder in greeting. "Baby," I whispered. "Oh, it's so good to see you." I reached out to pet him, and he nuzzled me as if to ask where I'd been. Realizing I had no time, I reluctantly pulled away and set out for the western town once again, only to notice the steady thumps of his paws following me. I turned around and smiled at him. "You coming with me, buddy?" The sock puppet quickly caught up to me, and we proceeded to pick up our pace, running through the streets side by side. The ground soon changed from dark and solid to light and sandy underneath my feet. Upon entering Twinvale Point, I felt a sharp sting of reminiscence as I was instantly reminded of love I used to harbor for its rugged, charming aesthetic. It took us a while to find the stagecoach. Just when I was about to panic, thinking that Warren had screwed me over and taken away Nathan to some other place, I heard the sound of horses puffing. I spun around and there he was. He had parked the carriage right in front of a saloon. I shuddered when I realized that it was the exact same one in which I had encountered the Laughing Cowboy for the last time. The last time before I had learned his name. Still, I immediately ran over to the coach seat, the sock puppet following suit. Nathan was sprawled out across it, peacefully slumbering, the plush stork clutched tightly in his hands. I reached up to nudge him awake. His eyes fluttered open, and he drowsily sat up in his seat. "What's going on?" he murmured, blinking and rubbing his head. I could see him squint in an attempt to make out my features in the darkness. "Leia, is that you?" "Yes, yes, it's me. Are you all right?" "Of course," he slurred. "Why wouldn't I be? What are you doing here?" "I don't know if I got time to explain, but I'm here because of you, and everything's going to be fine. Now I just need to wait." "Wait for what?" Nathan asked, regarding me and my fluffy companion in confusion. "Not for what," I corrected him. I glanced around, wishing it was only a little brighter. Where was he? Should I just stay here? I had reached Nathan. I had won. I felt myself growing more and more nervous, my fingers fidgeting with the locket around my neck. Suddenly, Mr. Scratch let out a low, soft growl. I spun around only to find the bronze silhouette of a man standing out against the moonlight. He was casually leaning against the wooden porch pillar of the closed gift shop right across from us. I could tell by the fit of his clothing that he was Colt again. "Good to see you," a low chuckle erupted from his throat. "Did you miss me?" "With every knife so far," I replied dryly. Warren let out a loud cackle before lowering his voice. "You wouldn't talk like that if you knew what's good for you." "So, will you make good on your wager? I'm here. I made it." I tried hard to sound firm, but my voice was shaking ever so slightly. "And I am incredibly proud of you." The cowboy's tone was mocking. "I did have you, though. For just a mere few seconds I had you." "Like hell you did," I said. "Finding capture. Me and my friend kicked your ass. I'd hardly call that captured." "But do you not think that is a bit unfair?" I vehemently shook my head. "I don't. Also, you said you'd give me a head start of 10 hours. No way that was that long in. I said, maybe I would give you 10 hours. I felt my heart drop. You can't do this. No matter when you think you caught me, I made it out and I'm standing here right now. You promised. No matter how you look at it, I won. Warren let out a soft sigh. Come here. He gestured for me to come closer. What? No way. I quickly leaned behind Mr. Scratch, my hand on the revolver. I said, come here, he repeated, more sternly this time. I'm not sure why, but I felt my eyes tear up ever so slightly. Make good on your bargain, I hissed, clinging to the sock puppet's fur. I could hear a growl rumble in his throat ever so quietly. To be frank, I did not think you would make it. When I was underground at the time, I was not even looking for you, to be honest. He let out a short laugh. Imagine my surprise. I caught Nathan's glance out of the corner of my eye. He was looking beyond confused. What's going on? He stammered. I shook my head in his direction. Warren pushed himself off the pillar and slowly began to approach us. There was a certain ease in his step, but as he got closer, I could see the deep scowl on his face. He reached out, grabbed Nathan by the collar, and swiftly flung him off his coach seat. He let out a startled gasp, followed by a muffled grunt as his body hit the ground. What are you doing? I whimpered in a voice much more anxious than I had intended. You're hurting him. Warren shrugged and gave Nathan a small kick in the ribs. I lunged at him, pushing him away. He stumbled a few steps backwards, but quickly regained his footing. There, he's on the ground again. Ignoring Warren's sneer, I bent down by Nathan's side. He was lying in the dirt, motionless. Nathan, I uttered, patting him on the shoulder. My heart was pounding in my chest and my head was spinning. I had no idea what was happening. Are you okay? Say something. My friend let out a low groan. Warren chuckled from behind me. Ah, he'll be fine. If you were only to sit on a carriage all day, you would not remember how to walk right away either. He's just a little weak is all. I swallowed and shakily rose to my feet. Does that mean you fixed him? Just like that? After a short pause, I added. Are you kidding me? I am not. He sounded almost annoyed with me. Think about it. It was me who chose him. He belonged to me. It was due to my will that he was bound to that carriage. When I want him to be able to get off of it again, he can get off it. I calmed down a bit, my breathing slowing down. Good, I uttered, slightly more confident. Now make me normal again. Warren let out that same haughty low chuckle. Now why would I do that? I froze. That was part of your end of the wager. You said you would. I said nothing of that sort. Your exact words were that you wanted me to, and I quote, stop whatever weird crap I started doing to your body. I will therefore not try to feed you again. His usage of the word feed nearly made me gag. Not that I'd need to anymore. That was what you meant, right? He added mockingly. No, you know it wasn't. I want my humanity back, I protested, a mixture of both rage and fear bubbling up inside me. I'm so sorry. I simply do not understand it that way. Then again, as we have already discussed in regards to Dale, one cannot bargain with something one doesn't possess. What do you mean? 11 days. It's been 11 days since I first fed you. Face it, you're way too far gone for there to be anything left one can consider salvageable. It's just a matter of time now until it's complete. No, I breathed, then more fiercely repeated, No, you're lying. You asshole, this isn't how this works. I asked you for it and you said it was common sense. My voice trailed off as I began to fumble for words. Not knowing what else to say, anger took over and I lunged at him, pushing uselessly against his chest. He stood there and he just laughed. But you just did it with Nathan, I protested. Well, Nathan has never been to the underground. That is the difference, you see. Those who stay up here, they become like your friend. Those who are brought down there, however, well, I'm sure you can figure that out on your own. Your little bunny is a prime example. I trusted you, I whispered. I know. I grabbed the revolver, and without hesitation, shot him in the stomach. He cursed and doubled over, coughing up black goo which dripped onto the dirt ground below him. My fingers trembling, I stepped closer, still aiming at him, ignoring my awareness of the futility of hurting him. He slowly rose to his feet, except for a hole in his vest. There was nothing left of the wound the bullet should have torn into him. I wish you would stop doing that, he hissed. Is this really the road you want to go down? Come on now, we both know you weren't meant to. I shot him again. This time the bullet entered right above his hip. He stayed still, staring at me intently. Then all of a sudden he lunged forward, grabbed me by the hair, and flung me to the ground. Before he could press his foot down on me, though, I pushed myself up and stumbled right into the sock puppet, who was motionlessly standing behind me. He growled and was obviously on high alert, but he didn't do anything. You think he will help you out? Warren called out, appearing to have noticed my confusion. He won't attack the one who made him. By now, he was steadily walking towards me. I quickly scrambled to my feet and, for lack of a better idea, began to run. I could hear him pick up his speed as well, his boots drumming on the dirt ground as he took up chase. I didn't know where I would be going, and in the darkness, I couldn't even quite tell where I was exactly. The only thing I knew was that I needed to shake him off and get back to the employee entrance somehow. That's where Darius and Madeline were waiting. They would know what to do. They had to. I rounded the corner behind the saloon, hoping that I could lose him somehow. Dashing through the empty sand streets, I let go of a breath when I saw the entrance sign to Twinvale Point come into sight. I ran towards it, entering the horror section. I remember being grateful for the soft soles of my shoes. The quieter I'd be, the harder it'd be for him to find me. I continued to sprint until finally the entrance to Hollywood came into sight. By then, the footsteps behind me had trailed off in the distance. I didn't slow down, though. My heart skipped a beat when I spotted a group of figures standing in front of it. The closer I got, the more I could make out. There were Darius and Madeline, but also Mitchell, Oliver, and Caroline. I ran towards them, not halting when I passed them, but hastily gestured for them to follow me. Come, quick! I panted. I did not have to tell them twice. Darius grabbed the rabbit-headed girl by the hand and pulled her along with him, while the others followed suit. I led them to the restaurant where the pianist was playing, rapt and unfazed as always. We crouched down behind the counter, and I had to take a moment to catch my breath. The questioning voices of my colleagues were drowned out by the sound of my pulse and beating heart. I heard Madeline and Darius trying to explain the situation to them, but I knew very well there was no way they could fathom all of this in such a short time. My mind was racing as I feverishly tried to come up with an idea, something, anything. I couldn't keep running from Warren. I wanted to be back to normal. I wished desperately that all this was just a nightmare, some grotesque dream I hadn't yet managed to wake up from. Was I really beyond salvageable? I couldn't imagine it. I didn't want to. Suddenly a thought crossed my mind. If what Warren had said about him essentially being the main authority over everyone he had turned was true, there might just be a way to get out of this situation. I wasn't sure if it made any sense, but I was basically clinging to straws. Maybe in some magical way, that was way beyond my understanding, it would work. I needed to kill Warren. I knew it had not worked the last time I had tried it, but the second I was about to discard the idea, the number three popped up in my mind, and all at once I realized something. Something I had never thought of before. Third time's the charm, right? Maybe all it took to actually destroy him were three relatively successful attempts. The first one had been made by Colt when he shot him with the iron bullets. The second one by me a few nights prior. And now. If I were to get my hands on some iron I could use as a weapon, I would possibly stand a chance. But I neither had Colt's bullets nor Bridget's hunting knife, so what was I going to do? As if a switch had been flipped, Another idea came to me, seemingly out of thin air. Perhaps the iron bullets Cold had used were still stuck in his body. Maybe that was why they had never healed either. I shot up, facing my co-workers. Upon seeing my stern gaze, they immediately fell silent. "We need to capture Warren," I said curtly. About 15 minutes later, I was standing beside the entrance of the hospital-themed funhouse. My heart was hammering in my chest when I opened my mouth and called his name. At first, I received no response. I called out again. "Warren! Warren, where are you? I just want to talk. I promise I won't try anything this time." Silence. Then suddenly, I felt cold hands grabbing me by the shoulders, their chill even piercing through the fabric of my shirt. I gasped, spun around, and of course, there he stood. "You, you're very good at sneaking up on me, I'll give you that. Or am I just easy to startle?" I stammered breathlessly. He stared at me with piercing pale eyes, an unreadable expression on his face. He didn't reply. I cursed inwardly. I could only pray this would work one more time. I swallowed. "Please say something," I uttered. "Are you mad?" He slowly, ever so slowly, shook his head, but his face remained stiff and numb. I slowly took a step towards the entrance of the funhouse to see if he would follow. He did. I proceeded to walk inside before halting, waiting for him to come closer. Half of the room was pitch black, no moonlight reaching the far corners. The second he set foot inside, I grabbed him by the arm, pulled him closer, and pushed him to the floor, letting out a scream. "Now!" Oliver, Caroline, Mitchell, and Darius came lunging out from their dark hiding spots. Caroline and Darius grabbed Warren's legs and pressed them down while Mitchell and Oliver held his arms in place. "We got him," Mitchell yelled. I fumbled for my phone and switched on its flashlight, pointing it at the struggling and hissing pretender. I then reached out to tear open his shirt. Peeling the wrinkly old fabric aside, I laid eyes on the 3 bullet holes. Ignoring the queasy feeling in my stomach, I plunged my pointer and middle finger into the lower one. I almost gagged as I made contact with the frayed, rotten flesh. Warren let out a howl of pain as my fingers proceeded to search for the iron bullet. I could only pray it wasn't too deep down. Then finally, my fingertips met with something hard. I pinched it with my nails and attempted to pull it out. It took me about an entire minute to produce it from the grayed flesh. But when I finally did, I wasted no time and tore out the other two as fast as I could. Warren was thrashing and squirming, and my friends were visibly straining themselves to keep him in place. I dropped my phone. I had no idea if this would work in any way. Still, I felt like I should at least try. I removed the locket from my neck and pressed it to the upper bullet wound. Its tip sank into the flesh, but it wasn't nearly deep enough. I looked down at Warren, and he stared back up at me with void, pale eyes. For once, there was no hatred in his gaze, no jeer, no mockery. And for a short moment, a mere split second, I hesitated. "What are you waiting for? Do it!" I heard Caroline cry out from behind me. I raised my hand and shut my eyes. Then I brought my palm down on the locket with all my might. Warren let out a howl of pain, arching his back as the iron and silver, filled with the red verbena blossoms, buried themselves in his flesh. Collecting the old slugs in my fist, I forced open his mouth, trying to avoid his teeth, and shoved them inside. He was barely moving anymore, but still struggled to try and spit them out, but I pressed my hand over his lips. Muffled screams of agony erupted from his throat, and I squeezed my eyes shut, turning my head. I didn't want to look at him. I didn't want to see him die. And then suddenly, his head grew limp in my grasp and fell to the floor. He must have finally swallowed them. He wasn't moving anymore. I slowly, ever so slowly, removed my wet, trembling palm from his mouth. My friends uncertainly pulled away from him. It was only when Caroline hugged me from behind, squealing that I'd made it, that I felt hot, thick tears running down my cheeks. Madeline jumped out from her hiding place, cheering and clapping her hands, but I felt like she was just somewhere far, far away. I still know I stammered something about Nathan lying in Twinvale Point and that he needed help, quickly, but everything else is just a blur by now. Caroline drove me home that night. She has something really motherly to her. She made sure I cleaned myself up a bit before essentially sending me to bed. She asked if she could stay on the couch for the night to watch out for me, but I gratefully declined. I passed out from exhaustion pretty quickly and slept dreamlessly. I woke up this morning to 5 missed calls from Dale, 2 from Mitchell, 1 from Darius, and 3 from an unknown number. I called Darius back first. He told me that he had brought Nathan to the hospital. He had apparently woken up about 6 hours after they had taken him in. He asked if I was okay, and I told him I was. I asked him about Madeline, and he told me she had stayed in the park for the night. The next person I called was Adele. He picked up immediately. After he had apologized a couple times, and I reassured him that it was fine, he revealed that he was still on his way back to the park, but had already heard of what had happened, as Mitchell had told him everything over the phone. I asked about the contract and whether it was still in place. He grew very stern as he told me that it was, but with Warren gone, there was no enforcer, and Mulberry and Moth most certainly wouldn't fill the role. Of course, I immediately told him about Madeline, suggesting he'd talk to the elders underground and see to it that maybe she could take his place. I think if the contract has to live on, she's the best guard of the park that we could possibly come across. Dale said he liked the idea and that he would see what he could make of it. I also asked if I could have my job back, and he said he could hardly deny me this wish, given the circumstances. I found my backpack resting near my bedside. I emptied it, spilling its contents all over the floor. Apart from my used clothing and the revolver, which I dared not to look at, there was one of the iron nails I had carried around with me earlier, too. I picked it up, feeling a slight sting. I'm not sure why, but I felt uncomfortable holding it. I tossed it into the trash can, then proceeded to freshen up and got on my way to the park. Just a quick visit to satisfy my yearning for the sock puppet. The first being I encountered, however, was Madeline. She was sitting by the employee entrance, almost as if she had been expecting me. "Hello. How are you? Are you feeling better? You looked awful yesterday night," she chattered, sounding partly worried and partly happy to see me. I smiled at her. "I'm okay, I guess. How are you doing?" "I'm great. Not only hasn't anyone shown up to get me yet, I also had a really good night's rest. I slept in the room of the piano man, right on top of his piano," she giggled. "Weren't you frightened at all? I was pretty shocked after yesterday." She shook her head. "No, I'm brave like that." She proceeded to take me by the hand and lead me off into the park. We passed the aged diva on our way through Hollywood, and I waved at her. "Hi, Grace," I called out. She didn't say anything, but I believed to have seen her crack the tiniest of smiles. I admit, I'm disappointed that the contract is still in place. I had wished for the other not actors to be, well, I don't know what I wished for exactly. Even though this thought kept gnawing at me, it was hard to feel sad. The air of the park seemed a lot lighter somehow. The sun was shining. I was just happy for some reason. We headed to Mr. Scratch's cage. He was lazily laying out front, but he immediately bounced up to come running at me when we approached. We spent some time with him until Madeline suddenly pointed over at the haunted hospital. "You think he's still in there?" she asked. "Sure. Dead people don't move as far as I know. Let Dale take care of it. I don't really want to see him," I muttered, swallowing the lump that had formed in my throat. Madeline couldn't be stopped, though. Just the morbid curiosity of a child, I guess. She skipped over to the hospital to take a look inside, only to come sprinting back at full speed. "He's not in there," she squeaked. "What?" I rose to my feet. "You're kidding, right?" "No, he really isn't," she insisted. "The entrance to the underground. Where is it? We gotta go check." I led her over to the restroom, Mr. Scratch following the two of us. To Madeline's great relief, we found the restroom door in place and locked, just like we had left it after our investigation last time. God, it feels like that was ages ago. "Thank goodness," Madeline sighed. "Crap, I really thought he got away for a second. I guess wild ones just dissolve when they die, like turn to dust or something." I refrained from pointing out to her that the restroom window was open. We went to the Candyland to check on Martha Mulberry. The ballerina was dancing atop her little stage, and the mime was hanging on to one of the light fixtures as always.
"They really don't give a damn, do they?" Madeline remarked, and I giggled.
I watched as the dancing squid-beaked girl twirled, turned, and jumped in her tutu. It looked really pretty, now that I thought about it. On our way back, we passed Layla. The nurse was standing in front of the funhouse again, staring into nothingness. Even though it felt quite pointless, I walked up to her and greeted her.
"Hello, I just wanted to say thanks for the key. I don't know how you got it, but it was very helpful."
"I don't think she can hear you," Madeline remarked.
"I wouldn't be so sure," I replied.
Soon after, I headed back home to finally answer the other missed calls I had. The one from the unknown number was from a phone Nathan had requested to use in the hospital. He asked if I could come over. I told him I was flattered that he wanted to see me, and that I had more or less expected him to want to talk to Dale first.
Yeah, no. I'd rather not see someone who did not speak to me once in, like, what, 10 years? First thing after waking up in the hospital?
I told him I understood. While I personally believe this notion to be perfectly reasonable, in the end, it's none of my business. As of me writing this, I'm having lunch in the living room while watching a rerun of a season of Kitchen Nightmares. I'm going to visit Nathan right after, though. I want to bring him some flowers, too. I decided on the potted laurel tree. For some reason, the thought of having that ugly thing stand around in my living room any longer really isn't that appealing to me anymore.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 16th through the 26th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.